I'm Marty Moscow, and welcome to Radio Times. New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy eked out a re-election victory by barely beating his Republican challenger, Jack Cittarelli, who has yet to concede the race. Here's Murphy speaking at Asbury Park late Wednesday night.
You know, we just had the most New Jersey experience. I was on my way someplace, and it took us longer to get there than we planned. As a matter of fact, some might say it took 44 years to get here. That's right, I am humbled to be the first Democratic governor reelected in the great state of New Jersey since my dear friend, the late Governor Brendan Byrne, did this in 1977. Thank you, New Jersey!
While Murphy's razor-thin win was a surprise in a state with so many Democrats and a reputation for progressive politics, even more shocking was newcomer Republican Edward Durr beating Senate President Steve Sweeney, considered the second most powerful person in New Jersey. Durr is a truck driver and reportedly spent a few thousand dollars on his campaign. Well, here to explain all things New Jersey politics is Tom Moran. He's columnist and editorial page editor for the Newark Star-Ledger. And Tom, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thanks, Marty.
Did you see this Sweeney loss coming?
Oh, God, no. I don't think there's a person on earth who did. Probably not Sweeney or Durr themselves. I mean, that was a real shocker. You had just such a giant wave in South Jersey, a giant red wave that swept him and his running mates away. But especially when you consider, remember 4 years ago, Marty, that he was faced a challenge from the teachers union, which hated his guts and spent $5 million set national records for the most expensive race in history. And Sweeney won by like 18 points. So it seemed like his position was unassailable. And now, boom, it was a shock.
Well, let me play just a clip from Edward Durr's campaign message. And this was a video he shot, or I think a friend shot for him on a phone. And here he is making his pitch to the New Jersey voters.
The Senate president has spent 20 years in Trenton. Higher taxes, increasing debt, and a rising cost of living. We deserve better. New Jersey, it's time for a change. So together, let's end single party rule. Vote for me, Edward Durr, for Senate.
And there he is firing up his motorcycle and fading into the distance. Tom, his message, part of his message also was that Murphy locked us down and Sweeney did nothing. You couldn't go to church. You couldn't go to work. I mean, it seems like there were several things that that he was saying to New Jersey voters. And apparently several thousand of them thought, yeah, I'll buy it.
Yeah, I think Murphy and in the latest polls, and who believes in polls, especially after this, but most of them showed that most people in New Jersey really supported Murphy on the pandemic. And what I'm hearing from a lot of people is the pandemic in the last 2 to 4 weeks faded in significance as the Delta surge ebbed a bit. And that the traditional most important thing in New Jersey elections is cost of living and taxes. So those emerged larger in that hurt. But, you know, that's speculation. Who knows? Sure. The frustration that Durr taps into there about rising costs of living over 20 years is really, I think, the key more than the pandemic. And that's what I'm hearing from most people I'm talking to.
Well, every time I talk about New Jersey politics, people complain about the high taxes in New Jersey. I mean, that seems just like a perennial complaint.
Yeah, it's quite something. You know, everybody always says we have the highest taxes in the country, and that's not true. It's 8th or 10th, depending how you count it. But we do have the highest property taxes. And the interesting thing, Marty, about this to me is that Murphy didn't raise taxes on middle class. He just raised it on millionaires. What he did is do very little about the existing taxes. And the property tax is always public enemy number one here. It's now, you know, on average, people outside of New Jersey freak when you tell them this, but the average property tax bill is $9,100. Hmm. That's gone up $350 since Murphy took office. That's not historically a fast pace, 2.4% average. But it was enough to leave people frustrated, especially combined with that video where Murphy says that they pounded him on, where Murphy says, look, if tax rates are your issue, New Jersey's probably not your state.
Yeah, and
that's the kind of thing that's just right over the top.
And Cittarelli obviously pounced on that. Just a couple of more questions about Durr and Sweeney. Has Sweeney conceded?
No, he hasn't. He's still hoping that, you know, there's a slim chance. I mean, I think he's realistic and thinks it's unlikely himself, but he's still hoping. He has, I guess, his mail-in and absentee and provisional ballots that still it could draw out a little more. And he's down something like 2,300 votes.
Nadir, he's a Republican, and he has never run for office, or he has run for office, but he's never been elected before. What is it going to be like to be such a newbie and a Republican in Trenton?
I think he's going to be completely marginalized. Not only is he a Republican and they're marginalized to begin with, we can all forget after this close call election, Democrats still control everything. But he's also, now that we're taking a close look at him, he has these horrifying Twitter posts about, Muhammad is a pedophile and Islam is a false religion. And it goes on from there, expressing sympathy for both sides in that KKK march in Virginia that Trump said, good people on both sides, equivocating about who is to blame for January 6th. So I think he's destined to be of no significance and will probably get beat next time out.
Well, and this is what happened when you run for office and you win and then people start digging through your Twitter account, right?
Exactly.
Let me ask you about, because my understanding is that Sweeney and Murphy did not agree on a lot of things. And I wonder with Sweeney out of the picture, what that does for Governor Murphy.
Yeah, there are some people who are saying this could, they're in the minority, who are saying this could actually lead to greater liberal efforts, because it's true that Sweeney was the one who restrained Murphy on some of his bigger spending initiatives. But I'm not sure that's the reason most people don't believe that I'm talking to anyway, is that these Democrats are now scared by this red wave. And I'll remember also, we're about to go through redistricting. So if you're a legislator and you just saw what happened, you saw something like 8 or 9 of your Democratic colleagues lose, you're going to be with a slightly different district the next time out, which is risky in itself. You might have one of these red waves in your district. So I don't think the base of the legislature, Sweeney or no, is going to go along with anything when it comes to taxes and spending and that sort of thing. They're going to tighten their belts and try to make some effort on property taxes, at least to visibly be trying.
Well, all the polls, as I understand it, gave Murphy a really comfortable lead until, I guess, a couple of days before the election. In fact, predicted an easy win for the governor. What did the polls not understand? And perhaps what did the Democratic Party in New Jersey not understand?
I feel sorry for Patrick Murray, who runs the Monmouth poll, which is usually the gold standard. He's been accurate over and over, and he was way off this time. And he wrote us an op-ed for the Star-Ledger that began, "I blew it." And when I talked to him about it, he said, a lot of the Trump voters just don't participate with polling. They don't trust us. Uh-huh. So they hang up. So I can be blind to a big red wave like this. That was his day after assessment. But there were others who got it right. Adam Geller, who was the pollster for Cittarelli, went public in late September with a poll to put it at 3 points and had an internal, he tells me, internal poll in the last week that the Cittarelli camp knew about that had it at a 1-point race. It turns out the latest it's at 2 points. So Adam Geller was close. I don't know how he managed.
I believe, like Pennsylvania, New Jersey has many more registered Democrats. Is that correct, Tom?
Yeah. The Republicans make up only 23% of the total.
Wow.
And Cittarelli got 48-49% of the vote. So the independents swung hard his way, and the turnout enthusiasm gap played big.
And why do you think such low enthusiasm and perhaps low interest?
Maybe Democrats were complacent and figured they had this and didn't have to bother showing up to the polls. But there is also a lot of discontent about Murphy among some Black leaders. Reverend David Jefferson in Newark has complained that Murphy has not given Black businesses a fair share of state contracts and has said things like, "Governor, you can't talk to Black people like this. The governor doesn't answer." Reverend Charles Boyer in the South, another Black leader of significance, supported Murphy, but is furious at him over his handling of a school desegregation lawsuit, which he compared to Deep South tactics and Jim Crow tactics of delaying tactics in court to fend off that lawsuit that is challenging our deep segregation here in New Jersey schools.
Well,
so there was some of that, maybe lack of enthusiasm on that front hurt him.
The governor talked about the Jersey experience. I guess the idea that it just takes a lot longer to get from point A to point B in your state.
Yeah. 44 years, right? As he pointed out, since Brendan Byrne won his reelection. I mean, New Jersey voters, I don't know if it's this way in Pennsylvania, but when you're sending people to Washington, we haven't sent a Republican into the Senate since 1972. Huh. When you're talking national issues, we're a very liberal state. But when it is elections here at home, taxes loom large. And Democrats very often sort of think, well, it's a blue state week, they can take this, and then people revolt and bring in a Republican. It's happened over and over. So it's quite something that it's such a blue state. This is the first time a Democratic governor's won re-election in a half century.
Well, Murphy, did he raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour? As you mentioned, raised taxes on wealthy people, legalized marijuana, restored voting rights if you were on parole or probation, driver's licenses for undocumented immigrants. I mean, those all check the liberal box, do they not, Tom?
They do. And I think we'll still see, you know, when it comes to issues like abortion rights and gun safety, I think we'll still see, you know, full-hearted liberalism in New Jersey. Those aren't real controversial. So I've been talking to people about, you know, where might we see this? And number one is spending and taxes. You're not going to see as much spending. You're probably going to see some initiative to cut taxes, especially the property taxes. Another place I'm hearing a lot about is police reform. You know, those are controversial bills. There are five pending bills, and they pushed them all into the lame duck session after the election because the Democrats did, because they're a little bit scared of the voter reaction to some of the police stuff. And Cittarelli had some success on that issue in this campaign. So those five bills might be in trouble. And I also hear a lot from Democrats that they, in focus groups, they worry about immigration. I don't know how this will come up. But even Democratic members of Congress who won say that when that issue comes up, they're scared. So I don't know how that will play out at the state level. But we're going to see some I think it's the lesson everybody on both sides is taking from this. Is about cost of living and taxes and spending.
Are there more or less Democrats in Trenton as a result of this election?
Fewer. The Senate is going to be down, I think, one or two, probably one. The Assembly could be down eight. And that cut their lead in half in the Assembly. And in the Senate, it still will be something like 23-17. So the Democrats still have pretty comfortable majorities.
And Steve Sweeney, who has been Senate president for so many years and called often the second most powerful person in New Jersey, if he loses his seat, and it looks like he will, who will be the second most powerful person in your state, Tom?
It's a big scramble now. You know, I mentioned four senators that I was hearing names of. And since then, people have called and said, well, you forgot about so-and-so and so-and-so. It's like about half the caucus is now jockeying. The latest story in Politico today is that Nick Scutari, Union County Senator. He's chairman of judiciary, and he's the author of the Marijuana Legalization Act drive, that he might get it. But he only has something like eight or nine votes locked down, and you need 12. So who knows? I'd love to be a fly on the wall in some of these back rooms right now. They're offering chairmanships and appointments, and if you elect me the Senate president, I'll do this for you.
Yeah.
So it's very cloudy right now.
Well, Tom,
especially because Sweeney's not, you know, he's not giving up yet.
I hear you. And I appreciate you joining us on Radio Times, Tom Moran. Thanks so much.
Sure thing, Mark.
And he is a columnist, editorial page editor for the Newark Star-Ledger, getting our conversation started this morning, talking about what the voters were saying election night this week. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Marty Moscoen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. We just said goodbye to the Newark Star-Ledger's Tom Moran about some surprising, even shocking election results in New Jersey for the Democrats. New Jersey Governor Murphy's narrow victory for re-election, former Governor Terry McAuliffe's loss in Virginia, losses for Democrats in up-and-down ballot races in Pennsylvania and other states indicate some problems for the Democratic Party. It seems that the anger about former President Trump that drove so many Democrats to the polls is fading, and the Republican Party's focus on the COVID mandates, the culture wars, and school curricula has mobilized their voters. Last week, we focused on the challenges facing the GOP, and today it's the Democrats' turn. And joining us is Basil Smigel. He is distinguished lecturer and director of the Roosevelt House Public Policy Institute at Hunter College. He's former executive director of the New York Democratic Party. Basil Smigel, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you. It's great being with you.
Nice to have you with us. And also with us is T.J. Rooney, former chairman of the Pennsylvania Democratic Party and former member of the Pennsylvania House of Representatives. He's currently president of Tri-State Strategies, PA, and co-founder and a senior partner of the Rooney Novak Eisenhower Group. T.J. Rooney, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Hey, Marty, nice to be with you.
Nice to have you both with us. And let me just make sure our listeners can join us because we really do want to hear from you. You can email us at radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can always call us. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. TJ, let me begin with you, but Baz, I'd like to hear from you as well. I mean, how much should we read into an off-year election? Are we seeing the sort of natural ebb and flow of politics, or are we seeing a crisis for the Democrats? TJ?
I think you're seeing both. I mean, both can be true at the same time, and in this case, I believe it is. We know what the future holds in terms of off-year elections, but the results from Tuesday should be very concerning to Democrats. It was a pretty big shellacking, up and down and coast to coast. So, yeah, we need to pay attention for sure.
Basil, how do you see it?
I agree. I'm not worried, but I am concerned. There are some real kitchen table issues that I don't think were discussed in the ways that would draw out voters, not just our voters, but draw out those moderate voters that Joe Biden won over in his election last year. We saw some of that in New York, and you talked in your conversation about New Jersey earlier.
Yeah.
We faced a lot of the same issues and same concerns because we obviously share this metropolitan area. So, it's cause for concern. I'm not worried, but we got to turn things around very quickly.
Well, Basil, just picking up on what you mean by kitchen table issues or ideas. What, taxes? Taxes, the economy, jobs. Things like
absolutely. First of all, gas prices, supply chain issues. There are a lot of stores that you go into and you see the shelves somewhat bare, and that is concerning for a lot of folks. When you think specifically about vaccine mandates and vaccine hesitancy, in New York, you have a lot of police officers, firefighters, and teachers who have decided not to get vaccinated. A lot of them live in our suburban communities. So they're not going to get paid this year. So you have these economic anxieties that are tied in large part to this pandemic as well. So even though I do believe that Joe Biden has done a lot, and a lot of Democratic governors and mayors across the country have done a lot to get a handle on the effects of this pandemic, I do think there are a lot of voters that are still saying to themselves, well, we should have turned this corner quickly and are more quickly and are probably upset at, what they have to do to turn the corner, i.e. those mandates, and they're responding in their vote.
Well, I wonder, T.J. Rooney, whether we got to observe sausage making for the last couple of months about what's been going on largely in the House of Representatives in Washington, D.C. Apparently, there are going to be some votes today. But nonetheless, from an outsider's perspective, if you're just sort of on the sidelines watching what's going on, I think for a lot of people, they're sort of waiting, but they're not seeing any action coming from the Democrats.
Yeah, no, and Basil raised 100 good points, and he's 100% correct on all of them. And he gets it because New York and Pennsylvania, in spite of the fact that, we think of New York, we think of the city, and a lot of people outside of Pennsylvania think of Philadelphia when they think of Pennsylvania. So he gets what it's like to run in a state that's as diverse as New York and as Pennsylvania. But Marty, the other thing is, and related to what Basil said relative to supply chains and inflation, there is just, I'm not suggesting for a moment that it doesn't all do a whole lot of good, but at the end of the day, the American people will know that we've spent about $10 trillion with a T, $10 trillion, on new things and necessary things, no mistake about it. But that's a lot of money. And people are beginning to wonder, how does it all add up and who's going to pay for it? And that's where we give the Republicans openings, because they take advantage of you know, when we don't talk about the good that is embedded and embodied in that new spending, Republicans do it for us. And when they do it for us, they don't do it in ways that, that we would. So we've got to begin to figure that out as well.
Well, let me pick up on that. And Boss, I'll go back to you and just talk about at least what was originally in the, I'm not crazy about this phrase, Build Back Better bill, because it's also it's reconciliation and has some other names as well. Social spending. We're talking about lowering drug prices. We're talking about paid family leave. We're talking about expanding child care through the expansion of the child independent tax care. Tax credit. I'm reading here from the Washington Post. Universal pre-kindergarten, higher wages for home care, child care workers, expanding community and home-based care for seniors, people with disabilities. It's a long list. Free community college. I mean, this is what the Democrats, at least on the left, I would say, was offering to the American people. And maybe altogether that's overwhelming, but piece by piece, I would think that would be popular with people. Possible.
Well, I do. Yeah. So the short answer is, I think they're all important and necessary, especially as we from what we've learned from the pandemic, how work has changed in this country. I think all of those things are very important. But as CJ said, if we don't explain that to the voter, all they're going to see is the price tag, and all they're going to see is the back and forth. All of that stuff that we're seeing in the media about the progressives versus the moderates and the Manchin dynamic, you know, that stuff is typically done behind the scenes, in the submerged government, if you will. But they're seeing that play out. They're hearing the raw numbers, and those numbers are startling. And so if we don't say, and he's absolutely right, if we don't actually go around the country and tell voters, this is what you're going to get, preferably after the fact when we're all standing together in a sign of unity. But if we, even in before that, if we're not going out and telling voters, this is what you're going to get, this is how this is going to work, then all they're going to do is focus more on their day-to-day experience, which, again, we're still not, you know, addressing in the way that we should and talking about in the way that we should. This, they're going to focus on their day-to-day experiences, which is about economic anxiety. What is the future going to hold? And I forget who said this, but I think it was a member of Congress from Virginia who said that Joe Biden wasn't elected to be FDR. He was elected to bring back some normalcy and end the chaos. And because voters typically don't like big, broad pieces of legislation, we engage in a lot of incrementalism. That's the balance he has to strike, and that's what's becoming a problem right now.
Well, in fact, I just turned over a page, Basil Smichael, to Representative Abigail Spanberger. She's a moderate Democrat from Virginia, and she did tell the New York Times no one elected him, meaning Biden, to be FDR. They elected him to be normal and stop the chaos. T.J. Rooney, can you respond to that?
Yeah, I mean, some of that's fairly obvious because President Biden doesn't have the margins in the Congress that President Johnson did or
FDR, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's just not, you know, it's apples and orangutans. And you know, it's a very delicate balance because, Marty, when you think of it, you know, I understand full well. We focus on Abigail Spanberger and frontline members of Congress because they're the ones that if you lose the seat, you lose it to the other party. So I feel for progressives because progressives typically do get the short end of the stick because in raw politics, the equation goes like this. If we lose Representative X in the city of Philadelphia, he or she's going to be replaced with another Democrat. But if we lose Representative Houlihan in Chester County, we're going to lose it to a Republican. So progressives typically get the short end of the stick. And so I feel it, but you know, at the end of the day, Basil hit the nail on the head again when he suggested that, you know, we've done a lot. We've spent trillions of dollars on new things. We've got to go out and tell people about them, and then we got to make sure they work so we can keep doing it and expand on them. But the infighting needs to come to a screeching halt. So Abigail, Representative Spanberger, is free to suggest, you know, what the president's motivations are, but at the end of the day, he he and Nancy, the speaker, are trying to pull together this balancing act. It's like juggling on the head of a needle and trying to cut your hair and brush your teeth at the same time. So I think that we need to get this done. We need to get it together, and we need to start talking about it, because if we don't, they will.
Mm. T.J. Rooney, former chair of the Pennsylvania Democratic Party, also with us, Basil Smichel, and he's former executive director of the New York Democratic Party. They've had jobs since that time, but we were interested in getting them both on because of their experience with the Democratic Party and the fact that this week the Democratic Party got a kind of wake-up call from a lot of voters, and we're trying to understand what is going on. Again, we did this with the Republicans last Friday. And again, you can join us. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can always call at 1-888-477-9499. Basil, let me go back to you, and then we'll get to some of our callers here. I heard Joe Manchin say, I believe it was yesterday, that from his perspective, he thinks America is a center-right country. Do you think that describes America?
Well, it's interesting. If you ask anybody in the UK, they'll say that we're incredibly conservative, you know, versus, you know, relative to their. You know, I think we are, but I will say that even as progressives have gotten a lot of attention for their policies, whether it's defund police and so on, I think voters are very interesting in this regard, because they will not necessarily vote for a progressive as their executive, but they will as their legislator. So mayors, governors, they'll vote for the more centrist person because they understand there needs to be some balance. But we're seeing, particularly in New York, that our state legislature and in New York City, our city council, is becoming much more progressive. And I would say that the impact of the progressives, again, may not necessarily be in their executive, but the policies have certainly influenced executive decisions. We're talking a lot more about affordable college than we have in a very long time. The fact that you have all of these provisions in the federal bill that reflect changes in the way we work, those are largely promoted by progressives. It's important that we're talking about this. But at the end of the day, of course, there's going to be balance, because we have such a diverse country and our states are incredibly diverse.
Here's a comment from Donna. TJ, I'll toss it to you. She says, please stop saying free preschool. It's actually paid for by taxpayers. I mean, I think that's it's a good reminder, is that nothing is obviously free. It would be free to the families who are using preschool, but obviously it costs something.
Yeah, no, and, you know, whether we're on any given day, I think the nation is either center right or center left, you know, but, it does add up. And, you know, you hear from the people, I think it will manifest itself as it did the other day in the suburbs, you know, where we were winning, you know, some places in the suburbs by 10, 12 points. The other day, we just either eked it out or we lost it by a few. Mm-hmm. The spending and the concern over said spending manifests itself in those places. It's helped us. I mean, that my other concern or cautionary note is, like, you know, Marty, we've all seen this show before. You've seen it before. Basil's seen it before. Your listeners have seen it before. This is 2009 going into 2010. So we know how the show plays out. We need to flip the script on 10, or rather on 22, and not let happen to us what happened to us in 2010. So, you know, there's a lot. Sure, language. I think the callers, you know, obviously concerned about language, and that is important, and it speaks to the need for Democrats to maybe step it up and do a little bit better job of explaining exactly what the caller suggests. Yeah, it may be free to somebody, but it's all taxpayer dollars, and language is important, I guess, is the overarching message.
Well, speaking of language, Basil, let me turn toss this to you and the use of critical race theory in the Virginia race for governor. My understanding is that critical race theory is not taught in the public schools in Virginia, and yet that apparently was a very powerful message from the now elected governor of New Jersey that resonated with a lot of Republican voters. Is this a dog whistle or just a blatant lie?
It's a dog whistle and a blatant lie. And I want to pivot off of TJ's point, because that issue of language is extraordinarily important. Let's think about defund police. I moderated a discussion with Jim Clyburn last summer, and he was deeply concerned about that issue because he said, if we keep talking about defund police, we're going to lose a lot of voters. You had a mayor of New York City win this election, African-American Democrat, talking about being tough on crime. When have you heard that happen, right?
Yeah. That's New York City.
And you've got, so we were able to take that issue away from conservatives, and that language and how he campaigned was extraordinarily important. To your specific question about critical race theory, very, very similar problem. Critical race theory is really not the issue. That's something that we talk about at universities and what weave into our curriculum. It's really a proxy for a larger point, which is that when you add in vaccine mandates, it's really a conversation about states' rights and individual rights. And we know the pernicious history that has had in our country and how much it's been racialized. And so that's really what critical race theory is. It's a proxy for a larger fear of parents, schools, losing individual rights in terms of their children's education and in terms of parent choice. That is where I think I get a little more scared, because that conversation goes back to post Brown versus Board of Ed, busing, integration, and the battle against that, particularly in southern states. And so it is a dog whistle, because it's meant to arouse those kinds of fears.
Well, let's take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation. That's Basil Smichel. He's currently Distinguished Lecturer, Director of the Roosevelt House Public Policy Institute at Hunter College. And he's a former Executive Director of the New York Democratic Party. TJ Rooney headed up the Democratic Party here in Pennsylvania, also was a member of the Pennsylvania House of Representatives. He's currently the President of Tri-State Strategies PA, co-founder and senior partner of the Rooney Novak Eisenhower Group. We are talking about the challenges facing the Democratic Party. And again, you can join us. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, or tweet us at WHYY Radio Times.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowen, talking with Basil Smichel and TJ Rooney about some of the challenges facing the Democratic Party based on some of the election results this week. TJ, let me just pick up on this whole schools issue. Basil was talking about critical race theory, but as we know from these school board meetings, parents, and not all parents, obviously, but parents are angry about mandates and about school closures. And I wonder whether, sort of trying out this idea on you, the fact that parents were in so many school districts, stuck home with their children and got a chance to see what it was that their children were doing in the classroom, because they were doing it from home and they didn't like what they saw.
It's a very interesting question.
They've now become, in a sense, experts on their children's education.
Well, I mean, we as Americans do have a habit of, learning something about, a little about something, and becoming an expert on everything. So it's not a crazy theory. I would hope, my expectation, truthfully, Marty, would be that, yes, in some cases that may very well be true, but in other cases, I think parents thank the Lord Jesus every day for teachers, because they get the little buggers out of their house and out of their hair. So I would have thought, truthfully, that people would have come away with a greater appreciation for the job that men and women do in the classroom with these little buggers, because Lord knows.
Now, who are you calling little buggers? I mean, I'm sorry, TJ.
But kids,
I know, but hey.
No, they're all wonderful. Nice. No, yeah, I'm not picking on little kids. I'm just saying it's a tough job to be a teacher.
Yes.
So I would have thought that most people who saw what they did, trying, you know, especially like on a computer, trying to keep the attention of, you know, 23 7-year-olds. I mean, how do you do that? So yeah. If people have come away with that impression, I would hope that they'd take another look at it because they're mistaken. I mean, the job that those folks do is amazing.
Basil, let me read a comment from Eugene. He says, I'm so frustrated watching the congressional Democrats fighting over the infrastructure and Build Back Better legislation. Why can't progressives and moderates come up with a compromise? Because if they don't, we will all lose. What do you say back to Eugene?
Well, I would say that we will. The downside is that you're seeing it all play out in real time on television. That's the problem. Again, a lot of the there's often an attempt to not show how the sausage is made, but that's what we're seeing. And that's what social media does. That's what our 24-hour news cycle does. I would say that it is true that progressives are pushing a very specific agenda, but I don't know that that agenda is incorrect. I actually think there's some meaningful stuff in there. And it's always a fight. It's a constant fight. The problem is we're seeing it play out day to day and getting a sense that it's not going to come to fruition. And I also think that the White House was probably not as they should have managed expectations better from the start. I do blame them for that. But I am confident that something gets passed.
Something gets passed, maybe even today?
Maybe even today, but who knows? But I do think it'll happen.
But TJ, don't we want transparency? I mean, rather than those smoke-filled back rooms where deals were made and, you know, bridges to nowhere were agreed upon, don't we want to see what government does? Or is it just so sort of shocking that we have to turn away?
I mean, it's really not all that, you know, I think it's made out to be more shocking than it really is. It's more mundane and tedious than it is shocking. There's so much back and forth. It's not like, you know, I understand some people have this notion, they call it the deep state or something, where people in shiny shoes and fancy suits and neckties sit around and move the chess pieces. It's nothing like that. I mean, they call it sausage making and things like that, but mm-hmm. none of it is nefarious. Like if you ever want to see it, watch C-SPAN 2 sometime. I mean, if you can stay awake long enough, you'll get a prize. So no, transparency is a good thing. It's just that it's like everything else, Marty, in life. There's more to it. People think they saw the thing on ABC and when they were a little kid about how a bill becomes a law, and they think they're an expert on government. It just doesn't work that way. The back and forth, the tedium is what good legislating is all about. Bad legislating is taking an idea and shoving it down somebody's throat. But what they're going through now is an exercise in democracy, and we can be proud of that, regardless of the outcome. It's so much different, Marty, than the conversations we were having 2 and 4 years ago. I think people deserve and are entitled to see how it's done. Whether how they react to it or whether or not they find it interesting is, you know, anybody's guess.
Can I make a
specific point about
sure
that?
Can.
Because I think it's a great point, because we, you know, we're used to seeing or thinking about our members of the House and Senate engaging in these arousing oratorical exercise, you know, to sort of champion issues. But I would say that the art of legislating has been lost. And I think some of it is the partisanship, but I think it's also just a function of the times as well. We don't have that anymore. I think people expect that, but that actually isn't really how it happens on a day-to-day basis. And that's why it's so difficult to sort of get through this moment, because it's necessary to get the outcomes that we'll ultimately be able to sell to the voter.
Let me read a couple of comments. One from Anne Marie: hit every Democrat over the head until they say investment instead of spending. We were talking about language. And Basil, here's a comment from George who says, when Republicans talk about critical race theory, they mean wokeness that infuses the left. It's actually not a dog whistle. Democrats need to figure this out or they will continue to lose. We're actually going to talk with John McWhorter on Tuesday, who just wrote a book about wokeness and race. But just some thoughts back to George, Basil.
Well, I know what, well, that's what I mean about it. It is a dog whistle because it's not a real, in my view, because it's not a real conversation about cancel culture or wokeness. Critical race theory is really about teaching history and teaching history in a very specific way and to acknowledge that we all have bias. That's actually something that, you know, we talk about at the college level or in law schools. But in terms of K-12 education, it's really just about teaching history and a more thorough history, which should happen regardless. It's not necessarily, it's really not about wokeness, but it becomes a dog whistle when it's associated with wokeness, because what that suggests is that you have African Americans sort of asserting a certain position on issues that may cause some concern or consternation among non-African Americans. And that's where it becomes the dog whistle. It's not an intellectual conversation about the theory. It's meant to invoke fear, and that's the problem. It's something that's become far more racialized than pernicious than is necessary.
Here's a question, Tom, from Tom, I should say, for you, TJ, who says extremely low turnout in the last election cost the Democratic candidates, but not so for Republican candidates. How to get out the vote for Democrats, build some passion. And if I can just add on to that, I mean, I think the Democrats used Donald Trump as a way to get people to the polls, people meaning Democrats to the polls, to get him out of office. And I wonder whether that playbook has been played out.
Well, it's harder to vote for a president in an election. In Pennsylvania, it's effectively a municipal election. And the issues, while both in some cases Democrats, and it's interesting that there's a Republican in Northampton County, which is one of the three bellwether counties in Pennsylvania, along with Luzerne and Erie County. But you had a traditional, or what has become a traditional matchup between a Democrat incumbent and a guy who was exactly like Donald Trump in a swing county. He got clobbered. And then there were other candidates.
TJ, which one got clobbered?
Oh, wait, the incumbent was named, his name is Lamont McClure, and the challenger, the Trumpian challenger, was a fellow named Steve Lynch. And in that swing county, a county that elected a lot of Republicans, more, you know, they got, you know, the Democrat won. But the point I was about to make, Marty, is that in other places in Pennsylvania, in other swing counties in Pennsylvania, you had far, far more progressive candidates running against Republicans, and the far, far more progressive Democrat lost. So it speaks to the moderation of Pennsylvania and a lot of the things that we've discussed in the last half hour or so. But at the end of the day, turnout wasn't that low. Turnout in Pennsylvania is approached 31%. I mean, there are Democrats who won election 2 years ago, like the woman, Judge Maria McLaughlin, who ran for the Supreme Court, got as many votes as the winning Democrat a few years ago, but lost. I mean, the turnout in Pennsylvania for a municipal or an off-year election was actually quite good. And what we saw was Democrats getting raw numbers that they, you know, typically win with. And they got beat. You talked about Senator Sweeney. I mean, I think he got as many votes as he did the last time, but the other guy got like 50,000 more. Right. You know, so it's not about turnout. In this case, it wasn't about turnout. I think it had a lot to do with message and messaging.
Here's a comment from Christine in Basel. I'll toss this to you. She says, please don't dismiss so easily the effect of the vaccine mandate on election results. And I don't think that you were doing that, but I want to give you a chance to respond. She says, many Democrats quite rightly view this as a step too far towards authoritarian government and an alarm bell signaling the impending death of democracy. And as you mentioned, Basel, there are an interesting and sort of diverse mix of people who don't want to get a vaccine and are up against these mandates.
Oh no, I think the question is right on point, and it's exactly what I was saying. I certainly wasn't dismissing it. I actually think it was a significant factor, because in part, as I was saying before, you have a lot of teachers and firefighters, municipal workers, teachers, firefighters, police officers who made a decision not to get the vaccine. They are not going to be collecting a salary for the next year until they decide to go back or will end up getting fired. Remember, New Jersey, parts of New Jersey and New York are in the same metropolitan area. They share our media space. And so, you know, the New Jersey residents are seeing exactly what a lot of New York City residents are seeing. And they share a lot of the same ideology and concerns that in New Jersey suburbs as they do in New York City suburbs. And so there is this broad feeling among the 10 million people plus that share this metropolitan area. We're experiencing very similar issues. And so, I don't dismiss it at all. I think it was a significant factor, number one. And number two, I would also say that I have been surprised, and I know, and I would imagine the Biden administration was surprised by the notion that the anti-vaccine concern is not just a partisan issue. It has crossed race and class. There are many African American Democrats who I've come into contact, I know, including close friends of mine, who I did not realize were anti-vaxxers. Yeah. And I just show up at a dinner with them, and I realize they haven't been vaccinated. And they go on and explain why. And it's been incredibly surprising to me that it's such a diverse community. And that has certainly impacted the outcome, because there is a concern about government overreach.
Let me read a tweet from Renee and then toss something to you, TJ. Renee says, majority of people don't really care about sausage making. They just want the Democrats to do their jobs and get something checked off and done. 2022 is coming fast. Picking up on that, do you think Democrats, when they have the power, wield it differently than Republicans? I mean, Republicans seem to, you know, they use the filibuster and they don't apologize about it.
Yeah, they are more unapologetically inclined to do that. But remember, we were supposed to repeal and replace Obamacare. Wasn't that the thing that, you know, and they had total control and they did neither. So it speaks to where our politics are, I think, Marty, as much as anything else. Our politics aren't on the extremes. Our conversations are, as well they should be. But what the listener suggests is exactly correct. You know, we have the keys. We are in control. Whether or not we own these things, whether or not certain Democrats like it or not, it's up to them to separate themselves if they're so inclined. But these things that are in the bill, in the infrastructure bill and in the social spending bill, these are things we own. So we better figure out how to articulate them, and we better figure out how to sell them in the suburbs, and we better figure out how to, how to hone this message so that we don't – I mean, because, again, we've seen this. Remember 2010, Arlen Specter switched from Republican to Democrat, and the day after went to Lancaster County and for a town hall. Those were the beginning of the – well, those town hall meetings of 2009 and 2010 are the school board meetings that are happening across America. So we know how this play ends. We just need to make sure it doesn't end the way it did, you know, the last time we saw the production.
Well, we have to leave it there. We could go on. My thanks to both of you for joining us today in Radio Times. TJ Rooney, thanks so much.
Thank you, Marty.
And Basel Smigel, thanks so much for joining us on Radio Times as well.
My pleasure. Thank you.
You're very welcome. And both of them headed up the Democratic Party for Basil Smigel in New York State and for TJ Rooney here in Pennsylvania. To replay this hour and many more, go to WHYY.org and look for Radio Times under Programs, or you can download a podcast of the show wherever you get your podcasts. And there's more. You can find us on Facebook and follow at WHYY Radio Times on Instagram and Twitter. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder and Paige Murray Bessler. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thank you for joining us.